ChatGPT, AI machine,
satellite,
engine ignition,
click here,
and liftoff.
Last month, UK Deputy Prime Minister Oliver Dowden came into the House of Commons to make a bombshell cyber announcement.
Mr. Speaker, with your permission, I will make a statement about malicious cyber activity targeting the United Kingdom.
The UK had been rocked a few years ago by two cyber attacks that appeared to target the very foundations of British democracy. One of the attacks targeted the UK Electoral Commission, which is responsible for overseeing and financing elections. Hackers apparently got into the commission's email servers and made off with voter information, things like people's names, addresses, and political affiliation. And then Dowden reminded his listeners that the hackers hadn't stopped there. They had also targeted the email addresses of a roster of members of parliament. And now Dowden said, after years of investigation, he was ready to reveal the culprits, the people who launched these insidious attacks. It was, he said, Chinese state-backed hackers.
That is why the Foreign Office will be summoning the Chinese ambassador to account for China's conduct in these incidents.
And then, just a few hours after Dowden's bombshell, there was this American follow-up.
The Justice Department indicted individual Chinese hackers for what?
Of cyber espionage and interference in critical infrastructure
in a decade-long bid to obtain sensitive data.
And we started getting worried, to be honest with you.
This is Luke de Pulford. He's the executive director of something called the Inter-Parliamentary Alliance on China, or IPAC for short. And let's just say they aren't popular with the Chinese government.
The Chinese Ministry of Foreign Affairs has called IPAC the Nuisance Alliance, among many other names, which some wear as a badge of honor, but I think is much more serious than that.
And to be sure, Luke wears it a bit like a badge of honor because he's not looking for Beijing's approval. Actually, it's kind of the opposite.
IPAC is basically a group of politicians who are concerned about the pressure that China is putting on the international rules-based system and on their own domestic politics.
IPAC was created by a collection of politicians from around the world who were looking to coordinate their responses to perceived threats from China. These are the lawmakers trying to ban Chinese social media apps like TikTok, or are limiting the transfer of the fastest computer chips, or are even visiting Taiwan, which China sees as a bit of a finger in the eye. American members of IPAC include people like Senator Marco Rubio of Florida and Congressman Mike Gallagher of Wisconsin, both of whom have made pretty clear how they feel about the Chinese Communist Party, or CCP.
The CCP doesn't pose a danger to just Republicans or Democrats. It's a threat to all Americans.
Given all that, Luke was immediately nervous when he heard about these cyber attacks coming from China. And he wondered whether IPAC would somehow end up being caught up in all of this, but for a different reason than you might expect. I'm Dina Temple-Raston, and this is Click Here, a podcast about all things cyber and intelligence. We tell true stories about the people making and breaking our digital world. And today, a story about an attempt to hold China to account for its decades of hacking and this one important thing that went spectacularly wrong. Officials forgot to tell some of the victims. Stay with us.
Hello, I'm Adam Fleming from the Global Story podcast from the BBC World Service. We are looking at Lina Khan, the face of the US government's battle to regulate big tech. She's already redefined the way we talk about monopolies. Now she's taking on the likes of Amazon and Meta. But who is she? And will she win? The Global Story brings you fresh takes and smart perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Politics has never been stranger or more online, which is why the politics team at Wired is making a new show, Wired Politics Lab. It's all about how to navigate the endless stream of news and information and what to look out for. Each week on the show, we'll dig into far-right platforms, AI chatbots, influencer campaigns, and so much more. Wired Politics Lab launches Thursday, April 11th. Follow the show wherever you get your podcasts.
Spotting a cyber intrusion by a nation state, let alone attributing it to one, is a grueling process. Because, of course, these kinds of hackers, like spies, do all they can to hide who they are. In the case of the UK's Electoral Commission hack, the intrusion occurred back in 2021. Officials didn't even confirm it had happened until more than 2 years later.
The Electoral Commission has announced that it's been hacked by hostile actors in a complex
cyber attack. Now, the organization says its systems were accessed by...
And then didn't reveal that the Chinese were assuredly behind it until last month. Like we said, attribution is a slow and arduous process. And typically, that kind of work is done by people like this guy.
I'm going to load this and I put it into my debugger.
This is Joe Stewart. He's the principal security researcher at Essentire, a threat response company. And they're the people you call when you've been hacked and want to figure out who did it and how. He told us that one of the biggest ways they pin down hackers is through reverse engineering. They pick apart the malicious code the hackers leave on the system and then look for clues. It's a pretty meticulous, time-consuming process.
Really, it's just a matter of, you know, plotting through the code from beginning to end and trying to, I describe, you're bringing a picture into focus.
He says he starts by looking through all the normal functions the code uses. So like this line of code sends something to the printer. This one reads files. This one talks to the router. And then he starts labeling these common functions in plain English.
You say, okay, well, this is phone home or, you know, some other, this is steal files. Mm-hmm. And you go through the program and you keep trying to label all these functions.
And by doing that so methodically, he begins to find indications of compromise and little telltale signs of who might be behind it. Sometimes it's that hackers use familiar phrasing or code that goes across all their hacks.
You know, maybe a phrase, but it's very unique and we know that it's unique. We can take that and then go back into this malware repository and look for anything that ever had that phrase.
Or sometimes they leave clues totally by accident. Like, here's this crazy thing. A lot of the time, hackers accidentally leave their real names somewhere in the code.
If you've ever looked at your Microsoft, you know, C drive, you'll see that there's a folder like users and your username and then desktop or documents or wherever. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times you'll just see outright in the source code or in the actually compiled binary code of the malware, you'll see the name of the author right there.
Joe says the hackers might not even realize that they're leaving little digital fingerprints.
You know, they make mistakes and have it, pointing directly to their real name, or sometimes it's pointing to, you know, their hacker handle, which we can, you know, go out and search the internet, and usually we find some link back to their real persona.
Sounds crazy, but Joe says it happens more often than you might think. And then there are the hackers who are so proud of their work, they purposely leave a little digital calling card, a kind of self-satisfied smirk, but in code. The most famous example of this is Sandworm. They're the cyber warfare unit of the GRU, Russia's military intelligence service. And they used to drop references in their code to the epic science fiction series Dune, the one by Frank Herbert. In fact, the group got its name from the giant sandworms on the planet Arrakis. But the Chinese, they tend toward more philosophical calling cards.
They leave poetry. A lot of times you will see things like quotes or poetry from something that the author of the malware is really into.
Little Easter egg. And what's that like when you see that? Does that make you smile or does it?
Yeah, definitely, because that's another thing that now I can pivot on. I can use that to find other samples.
And Joe has become a bit of a student of groups like APT31, the Chinese group that did those two UK hacks. He's seen a lot of their tells, read a lot of their favorite poetry embedded in the code, and he's seen a change in the way Chinese hackers have worked over the years.
I started looking at the malware, noticing trends. Things were different about the Chinese APT actors.
APT, Advanced Persistent Threat, nation-state hackers.
And so we started realizing that, you know, the way that they operated, you know, as far as the Chinese APT actors are concerned, is individual locations would have their own malware families, their own command and control infrastructure. Everything would be kind of separate.
They'd follow some indicators back to Shanghai, others to Beijing. And in this latest indictment, U.S. investigators traced it back to APT-31 in Wuhan, an industrial city in central China. And initially, I thought that was a little weird, because Wuhan traditionally hasn't been seen as a place that produces prominent hackers. It isn't a cyber powerhouse. That was the purview of big cities with universities like Beida, the Harvard of China, or Fudan University, which is sort of China's MIT.
Broadly speaking, you're right that the Shanghai State Security Bureau is the bureau that is primarily tasked with gathering intelligence against the United States.
This is Nigel Ingster, and he's a fixture in China watching circles, partly because of the job he used to have. He was the director of operations at MI6, Britain's intelligence service. Now he's a senior advisor on China and cyber at a London think tank called the International Institute for Strategic Studies. And he said he was a little surprised to see state security hackers in Wuhan given such a big assignment of hacking MPs and targeting the election commission.
I simply conclude that the level of demand for intelligence is now such that tasking has to be parceled out to whoever has the capacity to do it.
But it's also possible the Ministry of State Security in Wuhan was asked to embark on this massive cyber espionage campaign for a totally different reason. That Wuhan had become a bit of a center for reverse engineering without anyone really noticing. And that might have to do with a guy named Chen Linsong, who is a kind of computer science legend in China. He may be best known for a book he wrote about the computer language C++ and how people can go about reverse engineering it. And he has a lot of online classes like this one.
Get a process, create a file, write a process memory.
He's walking his students through a program, basically teaching them how to do the stuff that Joe Stewart does. In fact, about 15 years ago, Qian opened up a school called Curray Cracking Academy. And it's based in, you guessed it, Wuhan, the same city where APT-31 is based. And if that seems like a stretch, trying to connect Chen's students with APT-31 and the Ministry of State Security, here's another little clue, which a cybersecurity blog called Intrusion Truth unearthed last year. They found a page of testimonials from graduates of Curray Cracking Academy, and they left feedback and where they were going to work, and even contact details on the school's website. One of the students lists his employer as Wuhan Xiaoruji Science and Technology Company, which was mentioned in the DOJ indictment. Now, maybe that's a coincidence, or maybe, like Joe says, there are little digital fingerprints everywhere if you know where to look. Nigel says Wuhan and the big cities aren't the only regions to specialize like this. Now there are dozens of hacking groups across China with regional focuses.
We also got Jiangsu State Security Bureau, which is focused on collecting advanced military technologies in the United States. Then you've got the Zhejiang State Security Bureau that is focused on Western Europe. So the Tianjin SSB does Japan, South Korea, Guangdong, you know, Southeast Asia, so on and so forth.
But the group that launched the long-running espionage campaign cited in the DOJ indictment was about something else. It was about firing warning shots against people China saw as its foes. After the break, IPAC's Luke DePaulford, the guy we met at the beginning of the show, gets a very cryptic message. Stay with us.
Blockchain, NFTs, AI. What does this mean for you and me? I'm Sherelle Dorsey, host of the TED Tech Podcast, where we bring you the latest innovations and biggest ideas in tech. Tech is evolving fast, and it affects our lives, from the metaverse to the watches on our wrists. You'll learn why people in AI make good business partners, about our future self-driving robo-taxi, what the next generation of Siri, Alexa, Google looks like, and a lot more. Find TED Tech on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
I'm Dina Temple-Raston. This is Click Here. Luke DePaulford from IPAC understood, expected even, that the Chinese government didn't like his organization very much. After all, IPAC was full of China hawks, politicians who stirred up everyone's darkest suspicions about China and its intentions. But he got his first hint that the dislike had turned into something a little more concrete in 2021, when a member of IPAC took Luke aside and said they had a problem.
There was a rather cryptic message that came via politicians who had been briefed by their own intelligence service, and I can't say which country, but those politicians passed along the message that there had been, quotes, a pixel attack on the whole of IPAC.
A pixel attack on the whole of IPAC. A pixel attack starts with an email that has an embedded image with a very tiny hyperlink that sends information back to the hackers. You may not even know it happened because you don't have to click on that hyperlink. Just by opening the email, everything from your location to your IP address and the devices you're using, even how your network is configured, is all sent back to a server the hackers control. That is what happened to IPAC. And while Luke wanted to tell everyone in the organization that they'd been targeted by some hackers, he couldn't. He'd been told in confidence.
We couldn't go to the other politicians and say, hey, we've been briefed by this intelligence service that there may have been an attack on you. So all we could do was tell everybody to up their game in terms of security, which is what we did.
So it was a secret he kept. And then he heard the UK speech announcing the Chinese attacks on MPs, and he was immediately worried that this secret was out, that the Deputy Prime Minister might be talking about the very same attack he'd been warned about years earlier, because many of IPAC's members were MPs who were, of course, China skeptics.
We thought, oh dear, this is probably about IPAC, but we don't know what it is, and we haven't heard anything.
And he thought, certainly if we were part of some government investigation, they would have heard about it, right? The UK would have let us know. But IPAC was never mentioned by name in Dowden's announcement. So Luke was relieved. Maybe they weren't talking about IPAC after all. And then, a few hours later, there was a Department of Justice announcement, an unsealed indictment with more details on the attacks. And as he read through it, Luke thought to himself, wait, this sounds really familiar.
The indictment said that over 1,000 emails had been sent as sort of pixel reconnaissance attacks.
So he and his team kept reading.
And when we were digging through the full indictment, all of a sudden we see this whole section about how it was focused on IPAC.
Luke says IPAC had no idea beforehand that it was going to be named in the indictment. It had no idea that the FBI had been investigating what had happened to them, and no idea, until they read it for themselves, that the Department of Justice had figured out that APT-31, Chinese state hackers, were responsible for it.
So that, you know, was a real shock.
The 27-page indictment was unusually detailed. The Justice Department accused 7 Chinese hackers by name. And then they singled out a private Chinese company, Wuhan Xiaoruji Science and Technology, as helping them do the hack. The indictment alleged that the hackers and the Wuhan company were responsible for sending some 10,000 malicious emails in the space of just a few months in 2018. The hackers have been at it, the Justice Department said, for more than a decade. And in that time, among their victims were members of IPAC, though Luke said he doesn't know exactly how many. And he had mixed feelings about the news. On the one hand, he was glad it was finally out and that the Chinese were being held to account for spying on them. On the other hand,
we couldn't understand why we were learning about this from a US government press release, first of all, which was, you know, less than satisfactory, given that it was an attack on our organization. But also, in some ways, I guess, worse than that, nobody had been warned, nobody had been briefed. So we're a bit upset about that. And I spoke to a number of contacts within the UK government and said, what gives?
We asked the FBI about that. And they said they had told the appropriate UK authorities about the compromise shortly after it happened in 2021, and that they had also provided notice that the allegations would become public last month. As a general matter, victims are told in advance if they're going to be named in an indictment. But if they're overseas, the FBI said they have the local authorities handle it. The FBI wouldn't say which UK law enforcement entities they'd shared the information with. Shortly after the DOJ announcement, Luke found out about a domain name that the hackers had used to send emails from. So he sent a note to his membership asking them to search for emails from that address.
And loads turned up, basically. So loads of MPs still had in their email inboxes emails from these attackers last Tuesday. So after the UK government had made its statement and after the US had unsealed their indictment.
Remember, this was a pixel attack, which means you didn't have to click on anything for it to work. Those emails had been sitting there for 3 years by the time Luke asked his members to search for them. What the whole episode suggests is that the playbook for announcing these kinds of attacks has gaps, and someone either neglected to inform or decided not to inform some very high-profile victims about a nation-state attack. Luke said, if it had been shared, why were those emails still in MPs' parliamentary inboxes?
Which suggested to me that the intelligence can't have been shared. If it had, they would have removed those emails. Right. There's no way they would have been left on the parliamentary servers for 3 years where they'd sat.
Or there's another possibility. Maybe the UK decided not to inform them for some other reason, which is what the FBI's version of events seems to suggest. Click Here obtained a letter IPAC wrote to Secretary of State Antony Blinken earlier this month. It asked the State Department to convene a confidential briefing about the hack, and the FBI said it's scheduling that briefing. IPAC says it wants to know a very simple thing. Who in their ranks were targeted by Chinese state hackers, and are they safe now? And all this begs another question. Will the next APT victim find out that they were attacked by turning on the news? This is Click Here. Here are some of the top cyber and intelligence stories of the past week.
This bill is about the extension of Section 702 of the Foreign Surveillance Act.
On Friday, the House voted 273 to 147 to extend one of America's largest surveillance programs for the next 2 years. Section 702 permits the government to gather information on suspected foreign terrorists without needing a warrant, and it was set to expire at the end of this week. The renewal of Section 702 is generally fairly pro forma. Lawmakers worry aloud about the expansion of U.S. surveillance powers. U.S. officials say it's critical to protecting America and national security, and then it generally squeaks by. But not this year.
The House will be in order.
Instead, House Republicans defeated it 4 times before House Speaker Mike Johnson was able to find enough votes for passage.
Let's get the House in order.
Also last week, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA, told reporters on Thursday that the state-sponsored Russian hacking group known as Cozy Bear stole passwords and security credentials from a roster of federal agencies, when they infiltrated the email accounts of several top executives at Microsoft. CISA said it has issued an emergency directive requiring the compromised agencies to change their logins and to provide an analysis of what was stolen and what else might have been compromised by the end of the month. And finally,
welcome to the Paris Olympics.
Last week, the head of France's top cybersecurity agency, Vincent Strubel, compared the country's upcoming Summer Olympics to a kind of Black Friday for hackers.
Bonjour.
Strubel, who was in Washington last week seeking some cybersecurity advice, warned that the Games could make Paris a target for politically motivated cyber attacks. And he said he's particularly concerned about pro-Russian hacktivists who might try to disrupt the Games in retaliation for Paris's support for Ukraine in its war against Russia.
Today's episode was produced by Sean Powers, Kat Shuknecht, and me, Jade Abdul-Malik. It was edited by Karen Duffin, fact-checked by Darren Ankrum, and contains original music by Ben Livingston, with some other music from Blue Dot Sessions. Our staff writer is Lucas Riley, and our illustrator is Megan Goff. Click Here is a production of Recorded Future News. Tune in on Friday for Mic Drop, which features our favorite interview of the week. And we'll have a new episode of Click Here on Tuesday. See you then.
Looking for more of the cybersecurity and intelligence coverage you get on Click Here? Then check out our sister publication, The Record, from Recorded Future News. You'll get breaking cyber news from reporters in New York, Washington, London, and Kyiv, among others. And you'll see for yourself why it attracts hundreds of thousands of page views every month. Just go to therecord.media.